Ghostly Thistle presents The Antique Shop. Episode 36, The Other Customers. After everything that's happened recently, I think I'm due a quiet week. Just me and the shop. I always used to be cautious when I wandered round. I'd still touch things, get dragged to places few people should go. But overall, I did try to be careful. Now that I've seen storage, seen what's hidden there, know that those items are so bad they're no allowed to be sold, I've let my guard down a bit. There's nothing in the shop that can be that bad. I'm lethargic as I shuffle down the narrow pathways, past the ancient cameras and newly appeared fishing equipment. I hear a faint noise, like a radio's on somewhere beneath the clutter. Realising if it was a radio, I'd never find it, I began to look for the customer who'd snuck in, listening too loudly to their music through headphones that weren't as noise-cancelling as they promised. I checked down the pathways, in the nooks, even at the counter, but there was no one there. I was alone. But that noise was still trickling face somewhere. I could just leave it, ignore it for the rest of the day, and maybe it would stop as easily as it had started. Aye, only in a perfect world, which the shop certainly wasn't. I floated round, further into the chaos, turning my ears this way and that to try and pick which direction the sound was coming from. Like when you hold your phone up looking for signal. I pinged from one side of the shop to the next, wondering how finding a noise wasn't easier in a shop packed full of an antique form of soundproofing. Eventually, after rifling through some wicker baskets full of old biscuit tins celebrating national holidays and anniversaries, and a box or two of buttons, I managed to find the source. A jewellery box. There's plenty in the shop. Most are made of all kinds of wood, dark, light, inlaid. There are a few lacquered ones from China or Japan, sporting a white pearl crane or shell Mount Fuji. Some are bound in battered leather, whilst others are made entirely of glass. The one where the sound's coming from is pretty simple. It's a rich red, probably painted wood, with gold leaves and flowers printed on the corners of the lid. The rest of the box is plain, and there's a wee winder on the bottom of one side with a warning not to wind it too tight. As I rotate it in my hands, I can still hear the noise coming from inside. Only it seems aff. These wee musical jewellery boxes sound similar, high-pitched and delicate, like someone's playing on the world's smallest piano. The noise I was hearing wasn't like that. It was deeper, longer, almost like someone whispering. Thinking that perhaps the music box inside had broken or become detached, I opened the lid. The sound became louder, more distinct, and it wasn't the dull notes of a broken music box. It was voices. A conversation. There's no dancing ballerina inside, twirling round for all eternity. And no necklaces or earrings either. The red felt compartments are empty. On the inside of the lid, there's a larger mirror than you'd expect. The size of an iPhone. But I didn't see my reflection in its surface. I see a room flooded with amber light via a few dull bulbs covered by dark lampshades. It gives the room a sense that it's only lit by candles. The darkness is exacerbated by the decor. The carpet is a deep bottle green, whilst the walls are a light-absorbing burgundy. There is no much furniture. A modest table with two chairs facing each other, and one shelf I can barely make out at the edge of the mirror. The angle I view the room from is a bit like CCTV, stuck up near the ceiling in a corner. I didn't know where this place is, or why I can see it through the mirror in a jewellery box, but it doesn't take long for things to become a wee bit clearer. The sharp angles of Madame Honora open a door in the room. She's followed by someone else I thought acted an awful lot like the customers that come into the shop. It's a woman, and she glances round the room with the same awe I've seen hundreds of times on our customers. Madame Honora closes the door behind the customer and motions her over to the wee table with the two chairs, the one I seem to be pointing directly at. The woman gingerly takes the chair opposite the one Honora sits in, leaning back languidly, surveying her guest. No one says anything. I half expect Honora to ask what she can help with before I remember who and what she is. Eventually, unable to bear the silence, the woman, with her handbag balanced on her lap, begins to tell her tale. She's been working for the same company for 5 years, ever since she got accepted onto their graduate programme. Diligently, over that time, she became a permanent employee and built up her portfolio, hoping that in a few years she could use it to apply for a promotion. She dug her nails into the faux leather of her handbag, leaving crescent moon impressions in the surface, hesitating with her next words, like she wanted to go on, but was afraid if she did, she'd never stop. The time came for promotions, hard to come by according to her, and there was only one opportunity in her department. She and two other colleagues applied. One was a lad who'd started at the same time as her, and the other was a lassie who was only a few years into her job but had been the star of her particular programme. This woman was confident she was the best candidate to get a promotion. You can probably guess where this is going. She didn't get it. Not able to understand why, she marched to her manager to demand to know the reasons. The manager fobbed her off, saying that who they'd chosen, the younger lassie, had performed better, even though she'd not been working as long. Smelling shite, the woman dug around, shook the grapevine, and found out that the reason she was overlooked was because of her age. An age where every woman, apparently, goes off on maternity leave to have bairns. It'd be a waste to promote her when she was about to take a few years off. This other lassie didn't want bairns, so she was the safer option. A wee bird had told the woman about Madame Honora, about what she did, what she could do. And here she was, sitting in a dark room, asking the auntie madam for a favour. Madame Honora asked, in her sharp, smoky voice, what exactly the customer wanted. For the lassie who got the promotion to do so badly, to make such a shambles of her new role, that management would be begging for the woman to take over. Honestly, I thought it was going to be worse. Heartbreak, a mysterious accident, maiming, even death. This was tame. I wondered for a moment if Honora would refuse. too beneath her. But then I realised I wasn't entirely sure what it was Madame Honora even did. What did being the anti-madam even entail? Honora slides from her chair and heads towards the city shelves just out of my view, draws her fingers over something I can't see, then returns to the table with a pot in her hands. A succulent, to be exact. It was quite short, resembled a flower, as though someone had poorly photoshopped a rose. Did it smell? Was it poisonous? Madame Honora places the pot in front of the woman and retakes her seat. She begins to explain that in order to make this promoted colleague fail, the plant would need watered twice a week for 2 weeks. Each watering must contain a drop of blood. It could be anyone's, as long as it was human. After the fortnight was over, the promoted colleague would be on the brink of losing her job. The woman stares at the succulent as though it's a winning lottery ticket, a mix of awe and disbelief. A blood-eating succulent? Why not? I've never seen any in the shop. Yet. But this made me realise something. Eh, all the objects I've come across, all of the horrible things they do or can do, some of them must come from Madame Honora. She must have made them. Whether the succulent was a normal desk plant before she got her hands on it is still a mystery. But knew it can destroy people's careers in a matter of weeks. The woman happily takes her new desk plant and is escorted through the room by Madame Honora. After the customer's gone, she starts arranging something beneath where I'm positioned, before going back to the table with a small notebook that she begins to write in. I'm not at an angle where I can see the writing, but after a few lines of scribbling, she stops abruptly. Her body appears to tense, shoulders going rigid and her grip on the pen turning her knuckles white. There's a shadow in the corner of the mirror, near the door where the customer had left. They smother what light is in the room, and I can't see their face. I can't really see them at all. Know their height, their features, if they're even human. Madame Honora does nae keep writing, but she's tensed, waiting for something. She knows she has a visitor, but does nae seem happy about it. The shadow asks if the statue's been sold yet. They were a collector? That's a wee bit disconcerting. I wonder if Flora, or that man looking for the rose, frequent Honora's place as much as they do Madame Norna's. Madame Honora snaps her pen down on the table, but the motion's restrained, as though she thought better of being rude to this person. She leans back in her chair and stares at the shadow, the usual sharpness and condescension replaced by something more uncertain. Wary. She answers that she hasn't sold the statue yet. I can tell she wants to say something more, something petulant, but whatever is causing her body to tense is also holding her tongue. This version of Honora is far from the one I've met. Her confidence had vanished, her careless, blunt way of speaking replaced by restraint. Seeing her, of all people, act this way began to make me inexplicably afraid. Who was this shadow? I was concentrating so intently on this conversation that when the bell to the shop bounced down the pathway to where I was, I had a heart attack. I'd briefly looked away from the mirror to check who'd come in, but when I glanced back, Honora was staring straight at me. I slammed the lid shut and almost threw the box across the shop. It hadn't been a customer, and as I was standing stupidly still with this jewellery box in my hands, Finn appeared down the aisle. I didn't notice anything at the time. I was too unsettled. But I wish I'd taken the time to observe my second familiar. Not that it would have prepared me much for what came later. Instead, I told him I needed to go and see the madam. His eyebrows crease, and he says he needs to speak to me about something. I tell him later, after. His eyes cast down to the ground. He changes weight from one foot to the other. Looks as though he's about to open his mouth to say something. But I take no notice and head upstairs to see my boss. I rarely go upstairs by myself. I'm usually always with a customer. So it's strange to only hear one floorboard creak at a time. I round the banister and go into the front room. Madame Norna is sitting in her usual seat, looking at a book she doesn't seem to be reading. Her eyes are distant. I begin to say something. As soon as the first syllable is released, she jumps visibly and whips her head to face me. Did I just startle the madam? The madam who waits at the top of the stairs for most of the customers. The madam who practically knows how everything plays out. Maybe she wasn't feeling well? Maybe even the guardian of fate catches a cold? I apologise and start to tell her about the box and what I'd seen. I place it on the coffee table and immediately suggest we put it in storage, just in case it was a two-way system. I didn't want to hinky what havoc Madame Honora could cause if she caught a glimpse into the shop. I assume the madam will agree or suggest something more secure. I at least expect her to tell me what's going to happen with it. But she doesn't. She looks at the box as though she can't make up her mind, as though it's one of the hardest decisions to make. She tells me not to worry, and that I should leave it with her. Maybe it wasn't as simple as hiding it away in storage. I nod in understanding and leave my boss alone with the box that's somehow connected to Madame Honora's shop. It was only when I got downstairs that I realised how strange it was that the madam hadn't told me anything. I'd still touch things, get dragged knew that I've seen storage. Seen what's hidden there. Know what those items... Did I read this 2 days ago? You wouldn't think so, would you? Jesus fucking Christ. Thinking that perhaps the music box... The music box? Okay, right. That's... Yep. That's fine. The woman happily takes her new desk plant and is escorted. Thank you for listening to episode 36 of The Antique Shop. Episode 37 will be released in 2 weeks' time. If you'd like to join in the discussion of the world building and the lore of The Antique Shop, then head over to Reddit, The Antique Shop Pod, where we have quite a few members now. I usually post behind the scenes information. I think that's mostly what I've used Reddit for at the minute. Behind the scenes inspirations for stories, latest purchases, apparently. And it's where anybody can ask a question about the podcast or about the story or about the characters, and I will do my best to answer it. And it's also where, if any of you are artists or are artistically inclined, then you can draw some awesome fan art and share it on there. It's great. I love seeing it. Please more. I hope you all had a good Christmas and happy New Year. Or happy Hogmanay, depending on where you are in the world. And that's it. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.